CliffCentral.com.
Came here for love. Yeah, baby. It is Monday morning. I hope you came here for some love because we got lots of love for you. Despite the fact that we're all stuck in quarantine and another week, we're ready for it. I'm getting used to it. I might have a little bit of Stockholm syndrome, frankly.
I'm not panicking like I was in the beginning, that's for sure. And I'm feeling okay about there not being alcohol at the moment.
Really? You're okay with that?
Yeah, I'm actually feeling less stressed about it than I was.
Well, it's funny. I said to you, I went for lunch yesterday, and I had people here on Friday. So I'm not really that – I don't feel so locked down anymore, and maybe that's making me feel better. I don't have any huge desire or compunction to go out and, you know, spend the day at a restaurant or a coffee shop, although I think that would be nice for a lot of us just to get out and see other people. But it's not some burning need, which is so weird because in the first few weeks, I felt like something had been taken away from me. It's amazing how quickly you get used to something new.
Yeah, that's the whole thing is, and I'm sure it'll come up in our chat a little bit later, is that, for instance, giving up smoking is a lot more difficult when somebody else is telling you to do it.
Yeah, well, we'll speak to a guy called Reyes Saint, who's a legal representative, and he's been working in civil liberties and in, you know, the freedom of choice that people should have to be able to buy what they want and do what they want. And this is really an area that I've been hugely passionate about since the beginning of lockdown and before. And it's something that's kind of taken up a lot of my time and energy. And I feel like there are lots of people who probably agree, even if they're not as obsessed with it as I am. And we'll speak to Reyes Saint later on and find out what this means for us. So, what do you got on the agenda for this morning, Ass? Have you got some stories that you want to get to?
I do. On my actual agenda is getting some animals to the vet for their injections and things. So that'll be interesting.
Inoculations.
No, it's more like because they're all old and decrepit, they need things like cortisone and anti-diarrhea and oh my god. So the other day we had a bit of rain, strangely enough, a couple of nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when it rains, I put a cat box with some fresh cat litter into the house just in case the cats need to use the loo because they won't go out in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, maybe you shouldn't be eating while I tell you the story.
Uh-oh. Go on. What happened?
At least I warned you. But my dog tends to rummage around for truffles in the sandbox. So I've got to be quite quick with lifting it up and out of the way after the cats have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. And I'm watching TV the other night, forgetting that I'd lifted the cat box onto a higher surface. And one of my cats had the squirts.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh.
Mm. And missed the cat box.
Oh. Leanne.
Oh.
So I'm going to the vet to get something to plug her up. I don't care if it's cement. I don't care.
Oh, that is horrible. That's really bad.
So bad.
That is an essential item.
Oh, I just like wanted to just have my house spring cleaned.
Yeah. There's nothing worse in the world than cat shit. It's just the most terrible stuff. And you never get rid of that smell, and it's just awful. You know, people who don't have cats, and I don't have cats anymore, but we used to, and they mostly used to just do their thing outside.
Yeah.
But if you have cats and you don't have cat litter, it's actually a really bad thing. Because if those cats poo or wee somewhere in your house, it smells like that forever.
Oh, yeah. No, and I mean, mine are completely house trained. They would never do that. Yeah. So it's just any special occasion.
Shocking. Shocking. All right.
That aside.
What a lovely story, Leanne. Thanks so much. We're all feeling so much better.
That aside, I was scouring the news for some good news. And unfortunately, I came across an incoming crisis of sorts.
Yeah.
And that
is it another meteor?
No, it's a lot smaller than that, although it'll probably impact a lot more people. And that's an upcoming coconut crisis.
Oh, yeah?
A lot of people rely a lot on coconuts now. I mean, it's sort of, you know, using coconut oil to cook in and drinking coconut water.
But Leanne, we like Jabulani.
I was going to say, are you talking about a black person who sounds like me?
Oh, that's the coconut. No,
I didn't even think about that. How weird that I was so into the actual coconut. I didn't even get that. Wow. Okay. Sorry, Imabulalilio.
Yes.
But it really, I mean, people have been obviously eating coconut for centuries, mm-hmm. but it really only got onto the radar 10 to 15 years ago, kind of like the whole millennial Avo thing. And in theory, these should be boom times for coconut farmers around the world, especially in the Philippines and Indonesia.
Yeah.
Except the situation on the ground is very different because of low prices, limited investments, and a looming production crisis that could result in a shortage of coconuts in the near future. Hmm. So those people who like to try and go the healthy route aren't going to have those sort of things. But, I mean, already coconut products are so expensive. I was in the shopping center or the Pick and Pay the other day, and the aisle with all of the health products like coconut oil and flakes and all of that was brimming. No one's buying that stuff at the moment.
Wow, that's so interesting. I hadn't thought about what products people are not buying right now.
No, absolutely. Mm. I mean, would you buy a 200 rand jar of coconut oil?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
I never bought coconut oil before, to be honest with you.
To begin with.
What the hell do I know?
So wait, what do you cook with?
What do I cook? I don't cook, Mbulelo. I do very basic stuff. Although I did tell you I very famously made some lamb the other night, which I was so proud of. But this is about...
You will be referencing that lamb story forever, for the next 8 years.
For 3 weeks. I followed that recipe that a friend of mine had to help me, obviously. And luckily, the recipe was very clear. And I followed it like I was doing a chemical experiment.
Yeah.
If the recipe said 15 minutes, as soon as that 15 minutes went ping, I was in there with oven gloves and moving shit around and like watching the timer and temperature checking. And I had stuff from my laboratory in there. I was like using one of those temperature thermometers that they use for checking people for COVID.
Oh, you took this so seriously.
Oh, it was a chemical experiment. So, of course, it worked and the lamb tasted great. But I think you need a bit of creative flair and...
When it comes to cooking. I was just thinking with your scientific application, it could be better for you to bake. And now might be a chance for you to try some of that. I know it's something that you wouldn't want to do, but you'll see how scientific it really is. It is a science.
What am I going to bake?
A banoffee pie.
Where do you buy banoffees?
they grow next to the coconut.
Do you have to slaughter? Yes. Do you have to slaughter them first?
Basically, the banoffees eat coconuts, and that's why there's a shortage.
And then just remember to debone the banoffee.
Oh, yes, okay, you must. Yeah. Scale and then debone.
Just thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly.
You have to pull out its teeth as well.
Yeah, and it's gizzards.
Just put all of them in a little side packet.
And then you must remove the green ink sac.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to eat something called a
and
banoffee.
And the ears. No one eats the ears of a banoffee. Yeah.
I'm never going to eat banoffee in my life. It's the description you've just given is so gross.
Leanne, depending on where you go in the country, some people do like to eat the eyes.
Oh, yeah. No, banoffee eyes are great.
Such a delicacy.
They're like gelatin, so they give the dish some moldy, mold-like, you know, status.
Oh, you're so gross. You people are revolting.
You know what fruit I've got in my mind is a breadfruit?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, so I first came across breadfruits during one of my trips to the Seychelles. It was being sold on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Looks like an enormous...
It's like almost like a lemon, but it's much more bumpy.
No, yeah, but almost like a kiwi fruit.
Oh,
but
what is that?
Yeah, it's a really, really big... Oh. You open it up and it's got segments almost like a pineapple, except they're dry. And it stinks to high heaven.
Oh,
what does it smell like?
There is nothing that smells like it. Nothing I can compare it to. In fact, if you look on YouTube and you search breadfruit and cats, there are these montages of cats where someone puts a bit of breadfruit in front of them and the cats instantly heave.
Oh, Jesus. And cats?
It's so bad. And when I was in the Seychelles, I bought some of this from the side of the road because it tastes quite good. And when you're in the whole, you know, street market vibe and the music's going and all of that, it sounds and looks really good. And I didn't know what the smell was when I woke up, but I knew it was not good and had to discard of it.
You know what? I think the people who first discovered some of these fruit were really cooked in the head. I mean, who in their right mind in our history looked at that hanging off a tree and thought, I'll just crack it open and eat it.
Well, you must also look up, if you're going to do some gross research today, you need to look up durian, which is,
it
might be related to the breadfruit.
That's the same thing.
Are they? Because they come up as different searches. But the durian the durian's particularly gross because it has segments like an orange inside, but they are, ugh. So some people think it has a pleasantly sweet fragrance, but others find the aroma overpowering with an unpleasant odor. So
that's
listen
exactly
to
what it is, durian.
The
Thank
smell
you.
Evokes reactions from deep appreciation to intense disgust and has been described as rotten onions, turpentine, and raw sewage.
Yeah. Those would be at the top of the list. But again, it's like something that you... I've never smelt a rotting body, but it's what I imagine it to be.
And then you'd still pop that in your mouth after it to a rotten body.
Like I say, I don't know if it was the atmosphere or maybe it was the initial sweet smell. It smelled and tasted really good.
You can have all of it.
Until your mind figures out what it is, and it's like, no way.
If it's not in my local supermarket, I'm not looking for it.
Oh, that's the thing. I've seen it now.
Really?
Yeah. It's come.
I'd love to see someone like Woolies try to market this. Because, they always have this sweet, succulent product.
You can't cut one open and leave it half, packaged and half open. Because it'll stink out the entire store. So they sell them whole. Those enormous Pick and Pays? I keep plugging Pick and Pay. Hopefully I'll have a ding-dong at the door soon with some packets of stuff. But
Leanne's not begging, I promise.
But, they've got them there whole. And they're enormous and very uncomfortable looking.
You know, Eleanor, who listens to the show, just sent me a note to say that durian and breadfruit are not the same thing.
Oh, they're not. Sorry. Yeah. My bad.
Breadfruit is a staple in Jamaica and is eaten as a starch, either baked or fried, or roasted on a braai. So durian does smell. I don't know.
Maybe it's durian that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, because Randall, who's also been on the show a couple of times, he's told me that durian is revolting.
Ooh. Yeah, it's something else, man.
I mean, look that up today. And you could also go on YouTube. This is quite a fun thing to do. Go onto YouTube and watch people eating durian and smelling it for the first time. And you'll also find a whole rabbit hole that you might want to plunge into called Surströmming. Remember that? We spoke about it long ago. Surströmming is this gross, like, pickled fish that they make in Scandinavia. But it is apparently the most revolting stuff you could ever find. And people who haven't ever had it before taste it online and you see their reactions. And it makes you feel nauseous, even though you're not in the room.
For all the good they do, their diet is revolting the board.
That shark fin biltong. Yeah. They have salted shark and that sort of thing, which is just kept in a shack somewhere in the snow.
Oh, humans are bad.
Ew.
We'll eat anything, hey? Absolutely.
Durian fruit in the southeast, in Southeast Asia to Surströmming in Scandinavia, we're just gross.
Yeah.
I have the most boring stomach and palate in the world by comparison with people who like this weird stuff. I don't want to do one of those travel shows. If you paid for it and you gave me millions to do it, I wouldn't want to eat this ugly, horrible, nasty stuff. No,
Gareth, would you not be bored of eating the same thing every single day? I feel like you'd be fine with it.
I promise you I'd be fine with it. See, I could eat tomatoes, ordinary
tomato and avo salad every day
for the rest of my life, and I would never get bored. I could care less. As long as I was getting all the vitamins and minerals and all the essential ingredients that would make a diet healthy, you could give me a pill every day, and I would take that pill in the morning, at lunchtime, and at night, and I would never have to look at a kitchen again. I could turn my kitchen into something else in my house.
Wow. Mm.
You save a lot of time in your life, you know, time that people spend talking about food, going out for food, making things, buying things.
I want to bring something up, and this is a perfect day to do it. Can we just talk for a minute about people drinking tea properly, please?
Oh, I do it properly. I do loose tea. I have proper strainer pots.
Before we go down that road, Sia, are you very fussy about how you prepare your tea? Do you drink tea at all?
Very rarely, but I'll drink, you know, other things like a Milo, hot chocolate.
Are you particular about tea, or are you only a coffee guy?
When I buy quality tea, yes, but not like a rooibos.
All right, so let's start at the very beginning, because this is something I could talk for hours about. It is essential. Ooh, this is so important. I know that, there's probably someone who's like 17 listening to us now going, what the fuck are these old people talking about?
Mm-hmm.
But this is hugely important. So we're going to have to do this in 10 minutes, and I'm going to try and make it as interesting as possible, because it is.
You're probably talking about a black tea, right?
Yeah. You get mint teas, and you get people who have teas with rooibos and all kinds of other things. I'm just talking about ordinary tea. And actually, I'm not particularly, I can be a little bit more fussy, but I'm not particularly fussy about the brand. If it's a black tea, great. And the darker the tea, the better.
Can I test you?
Go ahead.
Okay.
What I'm getting to, by the way, is the preparation, not the actual product.
I drink green tea, white tea, artistic show tea, oolong, herbal infusions, fruit infusions, rooibos. The only tea I don't drink is black tea.
Okay.
I do have an appreciation for it, but all the rest is what I like to drink. And each of those, the water has to be a certain temperature, not always boiling.
Okay. So now we've got to get to this. So this is the important stuff. Because I'm not going to get into whether you drink black tea or oolong or any of that stuff you just described, or if you're an English breakfast tea or a Darjeeling or any of those kinds. Okay, those are just the types of tea. I'm talking about the preparation of good tea.
Because
if someone makes me a bad cup of tea, I'd rather not have it.
Yeah,
I'd rather drink water than have a bad cup of tea.
Really?
Yeah.
So your black tea, the water actually needs to be 95 degrees before you actually steep it. So that means that you need to boil the water firstly, and then remember that temperature drops at about 5 degrees centigrade per minute.
Right, so one minute, correct. But here's the thing. You never put the milk or the sugar, if you have sugar in your tea or anything else, honey, lemon, whatever you put with it, you never put that stuff in first.
No, definitely not.
What?
Never, you never ever do. That's disgusting and reprehensible, and you should be taken to the village square and put in stocks, and people should throw fruit at you if you do that.
Well, I've already failed then.
Shouldn't be having sugar.
Yeah, you should. Well,
besides it being a class thing, it's got very much to do with the taste.
Now, you start off, you put your tea bag or you put your loose tea into a strainer, and then you pour this 95 degree boiling water over it, and you let it steep for a while, okay?
3 to 5 minutes for black tea.
Right, let it get nice and strong, because there's nothing more disgusting.
Ugh.
I think I might eat durian fruit before I would drink weak cat's piss tea.
Oh, horrible.
Okay, so then you do that. Then, if you need to add milk and sugar, you add it after that process has taken place. Please do it properly.
That's correct.
Very important.
So to give you the two extremes, I mean, a lot of people don't like green tea because it's so bitter. It's not supposed to be bitter. The reason why it's bitter is because people are using 100 degree centigrade water.
Yes.
You're supposed to use 75 degrees in this case. And the steepage time is between 1 and 2 minutes only. See. And then you don't get the bitterness. You just get the lovely herbal flavor of the green tea.
I know people who will make tea. My sister and her boyfriend, they will make tea and they will add a lot of milk. And they will, it will be weak and milky tea. Gross.
So wait a minute. For you, there shouldn't be a standard to say, you know, I like 2 sugars in my tea standard. No, it should be based on what, how the...
Okay, so I told you I've taken to using a bit of honey now, which really is just a substitute for sugar. It's like some people like sweetener, or some people don't like any sugar at all. A real tea fan, like
that's me. I don't have sugar.
Yeah, like a real coffee fan. A real tea fan would not have any sugar in their tea. You don't need to, that flavor is great. You don't need to do anything to it. In fact, the purists won't even put milk in.
Oh no, yeah, I don't do milk or sugar.
Okay,
it's just water and the tea.
Yeah, so this is how it goes. And I promise you, if you get this wrong, if someone says, come over for tea, which is really an old lady thing, but let's imagine you go to a friend and they say, you want something warm to drink, and it's winter now, you feel like something warm, but you don't want coffee because of the caffeine, and maybe you're just not a coffee fan. I know Bulelo's throwing up now because that's all he lives for. But don't make my tea. I'll rather do it myself. You pour your own, and just let me pour my own. I know it's rude because, you know, in the old days, the hostess pours the tea for everybody, but just leave me to do it myself, please.
Yeah,
that's such a good approach.
I think one of the worst sights in my mind.
I can't believe we're talking about this. We're so old.
This is so also very shishi poo poo.
Listen, it might become a fashionable thing, you know, like Avril was brought back in a big way. Who knows?
Since, you know, there's a coconut shortage, people now have to look at something else.
That's a great point. I'm sorry, this is a fantastic point. Why do people get offended? I always say, like, you know how I am with my coffee.
Yeah.
Just let me make my own coffee. Like, you don't know what's happening, and it's not ruining your time. Let me do it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you'll make your own.
I want to manage my own happiness.
And maybe this will substitute the way people get about cocktails, because now we can't drink alcohol, and maybe alcohol will be so expensive after this that no one will want to drink it, and you'll go to people for tea parties.
I think it might,
all get on our knees and pray that day never happens.
Guys, now you are speaking the devil's sounds.
Wouldn't it be cool if we made tea a thing again? I mean, I know there are places, you know, tea gardens and tea restaurants and tea shops. I went into the Twinings shop in London when I was there in October last year, or it could have been in August. And there's a Twinings tea shop, which is the Twinings factory shop, the original one, opposite the Inns of Court in central London. And they've got every tea imaginable, but they also make a cup of tea for you there, which I didn't do. And I'm full of regret over that. And I think you got to do, if you're going to do something, be like the Japanese. Do it properly.
Yes, I wanted to say that.
Be like the Japanese. Do it properly or don't do it at all.
Mm-hmm. The tea ritual of the Japanese is just fascinating. And it's 10% of it is how you make it. The rest is the waiting time, the rituals around it, the stirring, what implements you use to stir, all of that sort of thing.
I've never been to Japan, but I've been to China, and they take tea uber seriously.
Yes,
we think we take it seriously because the British, there isn't a tea field in Britain. But anyway, that's a whole different story.
So be honest, kids. Do you guys then judge people based on what they drink?
No. Like,
if you just see some milky...
I do.
I can't drink that shit that they drink, but I don't necessarily... Again, like I said, my sister and her boyfriend, they drink this milky tea. It's their business. Just don't let them pour my tea.
If I see a mug, firstly, because it should be in a teacup, a mug of a thick-rimmed mug... with milky tea, with the tea bag still in it, in the milk, and a spoon sticking out, and you take a sip of it with the tea bag and the spoon in it, you're basically dead to me. You're dead to me.
You would rather die of thirst than drink from that cup.
I probably will never speak to you again.
Yeah. When are you meant to remove the tea bag?
Before you put in the milk and sugar.
Yes.
Shouldn't be putting sugar.
Yes, all right, Mulelo. All right.
You guys are so particular. I have to be honest, after last week's revelation that you guys despise people who sleep in socks, and now this, I'm starting to see that y'all are on some very different tip.
Well, you know what's happening during lockdown? We may be stuck. I mean, I'm not, but there are a lot of people who are stuck with some people, whether it's family or whether it's a girlfriend or a boyfriend they just started seeing before lockdown. And now suddenly they're in a position where they're observing these people acutely and they're finding them quite disturbing. So it's not only that,
but you're spending a lot, even if you're spending a lot of time with yourself.
Yeah.
Things like how you brew your tea and whether you're in bed with socks on or off, they place much more importance in our head. We don't have to worry about things like traffic and that sort of thing. So we think about our socks and our tea.
Stick around tomorrow as we discuss whether or not a toilet roll should be placed facing up or facing down.
Yes, that's a whole other discussion. All right, but we do have to turn our attention to very important things, and this has to do with your civil liberties. And I've been beating this drum for a long time, but I'm glad I finally got someone who feels as strongly about this as I do.
Can I have a cigarette while we do this?
Of course. Thanks. You can, Leanne. It's okay. Up to you. It's totally up to you. Raiz Saint is a legal representative. He's been in the law for a long time. He's interested in civil liberties. And I think we've got to almost start a hashtag this morning, because the stuff he wants to talk with us about is something. I mean, this is something that's been going on since the beginning of lockdown, but it's even preceded that, where people are prevented from exercising their free choice by the state. And it drives me up the wall, because we have a constitution which protects individual liberties, and yet we have people constantly trying to infringe on those and to reduce the amount of civil liberty that ordinary people have. So we're talking about unprecedented times at the moment. Those in power can change within weeks. Regulations can change by the day. Your freedom of choice has never been more important. So why are we allowing the government to continue to infringe on our choice to smoke or not? Over the past few days, we've covered how sectors like the alcohol or the hairdressing industry are impacted by COVID-19. And this morning, I thought we would talk a little bit about the tobacco ban, specifically. Joining us on the line, we have Raiz Saint, who actually is a legal representative for Gold Leaf Tobacco. We thought we would get his perspective on the matter and explain why your right to choose should not be taken away from you. So, Raiz, welcome.
Good morning, Gareth. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, man.
Nice to see you, man.
So,
you and I are probably not going to disagree a lot in this conversation. So for people looking for a fight, this is not going to be their favorite conversation. But I think you probably speak on behalf of lots of people in South Africa.
Yes, absolutely, Gareth. In fact, to give you the number, we're looking at about 11 million smokers in South Africa alone. So that's really an army of their own.
So, Raiz, I read an article over the weekend. UCT researchers have said that a major new study by the University of Cape Town shows almost all smokers have been able to buy cigarettes during lockdown, and they've concluded that the ban is backfiring really badly and should be lifted as soon as possible. The research unit on the economics of excisable products at UCT found that more than 90% of smokers had bought cigarettes despite the government's prohibition. Smokers have had to pay a substantially higher price for cigarettes and may have had to purchase unfamiliar brands, while some have had to turn to drug dealers, smugglers, or black market traders. Now, this doesn't surprise you in the least, does it?
No, not at all, Kenneth. Not at all. I think just to give you a bit of background, the cigarette industry has been filled with illicit and black market for as long as it's existed. Mm-hmm. There's a syntax on cigarettes which make it very profitable for smugglers to try and smuggle these things in and sell them at ridiculously high profits and not pay the taxes. Now, internationally, globally, if we look at it, there's been no factual research showing that a prohibition on the sale of cigarettes assists in the combat against COVID-19. If anything, if you ask me, all that this has basically done is really eroding our legal cigarette market within South Africa at a far more rapid rate. You know, what's happening is these smugglers, these guys are obviously getting a lot stronger because economically they're making an exceptional revenue now more than ever. Because I don't know if you've seen, there's also a huge premium on cigarettes. I've heard guys charging up to $200 or $300 for a pack of smokes.
Right, but there's an...
can you imagine the margin on that? It's exorbitant.
There's an additional problem here, because tobacco products, you cannot advertise traditionally in South Africa. Yeah. We've had a massive restriction on how you advertise. Tobacco companies are restricted in terms of how they can communicate. So here they are as an industry providing something that people want to buy, but they're not allowed to advertise that product thanks to previous legislation brought in by Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma while she was health minister. And now they're in the insidious and ugly position of not being able to even talk about the fact that their industry is in peril from black market traders and people who probably are, you know, not just doing damage in terms of trading in potentially dangerous goods, but they're also not helping the government to gain the tax revenues that they would from proper cigarette purchases.
Yes, absolutely. Look, Gareth, I think there's also a bit of a freedom element which you've got to look at here.
Yes.
The National Disaster Act does outline that the minister does have certain powers to prohibit certain things when we are in a state of disaster. Like, for example, if you look at the liquor, it's expressly provisioned there that the minister can prohibit the sale of liquor. Mm-hmm. He's got the power to do so. He doesn't have the power to limit the sale of cigarettes. So the blanket prohibition on the sale of cigarettes are beyond the minister's powers.
So and if you look how did this happen then?
Yeah. The cigarettes are, as you said now, intended for human consumption.
Yeah.
Right. Why would one say that a soft drink or a chocolate constitutes an essential good, but not a cigarette? Where do you draw the line on what's essential and what's not?
Absolutely.
The public should have some freedom within reason, of course, of being able to make their own election on what they believe is essential for their own consumption.
Look, you're drawing on something that is very close to my heart. I think that even if you want to do things that are bad for you, it should be up to you to do so. You own your own body, at very least. And while other people may have the best intentions in the world, they don't necessarily get to decide what's good for you and what isn't, even if they are
very true.
Even if they're in the government. So if you want to, I mean, there are lots of people who do overeat in this country. We don't see any legislation being drafted to prevent people from making themselves obese, do we?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like exercise should be made
mandatory.
Absolutely.
It should be illegal not to exercise.
And, you know, I think there's one further component here which you must consider, and that is obviously the addictive effects of nicotine. Mm-hmm. You know, on nicotine, in fact, there's been a recent research from France which demonstrates that nicotine actually assists in fighting with this virus. But look, that's a novel study, so let's rather talk about what we know.
Okay.
Those who are addicted require a constant supply to mitigate the negative psychological impacts of this, yes. Right?
Right.
And the sudden impacts of the absence of nicotine can create a psychological fallout like depression and anger, irritability, frustration. Just last week, in fact, we heard our president speaking, and he said we're experiencing a higher volume of gender-based violence.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that's because cigarettes have been banned, but, you know, you've got to look at this thing as a whole. And like I said earlier in this discussion, we've got 11 million smokers. You know, you take that away from them, and all of a sudden, you've got 11 million angry people.
Yeah, or at very least, you know, irritable.
With the effects of a lockdown, you know, you will experience higher gender-based violence and so on. So I think you've really got to look at this thing holistically, especially like you mentioned, with the excise payments and so on. You know, I'm not privy to everybody's figures, but I can tell you unequivocally, Gold Leaf makes an excess contribution of around 200 to 300 million rands per month to the government.
Sure.
You know, if we look at it year on year, last year, for the months of April to May 2019, mm-hmm. I think they paid collectively between VAT and excess something to the tune of about 500 million to the government.
Now, you're telling me government don't need that $500 million now. They need it more than ever.
Absolutely. In a time like this year, in an unprecedented time like this, I mean, that money could go towards contributions to hospitals for medical supplies. Mm-hmm. It could go towards food parcels for the poor who actually still are under lockdown. I mean, we've already seen so many jobs lost. Some critics are saying we're looking at up to 1 million jobs lost. You know, so I think now it's really a critical time to actually draw on all of these resources nationally and put that money to good use. And we don't want to find our situation or find ourselves in a situation where we keep the legal market closed for so long that even when we reopen it, because these smugglers have become so strong, it's much more difficult for our local manufacturers to actually get back in.
Yeah, and they've established their networks now, and they're supplying people. And you're never going to get that tax revenue back, government. You've cut off your nose to spite your face. Plus, you're now exposing the public to greater danger and greater harm. And you've prevented people from enjoying something which they had every right to enjoy before, and which they still have a right to enjoy now. So, Raiz, let's look at a best case scenario here. I mean, if government just said tomorrow, okay, we're going to ease off this tobacco ban, we would still have a while before, because now you have to reestablish the supply chain, and there's going to be a run on cigarettes, obviously, because people who haven't been able to buy will be rushing to the store and buying up more than they usually would, because they'll feel like, oh my God, it could be taken away from me again. That's just human psychology. Would that solve all the problems, though, in about 3-4 weeks after the unbanning? Or do you think that they've done massive damage that will result in longer-term problems for the economy?
Look, I think obviously the longer the lockdown on the sales go, the more harm we are going to cause. I think if tomorrow government opens it up, I don't think we've yet caused irreparable harm. Because cigarettes is a fast-moving consumer good. The factories will be able to produce quite quickly.
Yeah.
You will also have a lot of stores who would have already stockpiled, mm-hmm. but obviously not selling. Mm-hmm. So they would have still sufficient stock to carry them at least for a few days until they could get a new supply. And immediately once you start manufacturing, your excise payments become payable.
Right.
So the revenue stream would almost automatically kick in for government.
And really, Raiz, I mean, this is about people's personal choices.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely, get it.
Someone may have decided to give up smoking during the lockdown, but most people would want to do that on their own terms. If you're forced to do something, it isn't really about choice.
No, absolutely. I mean, if you want to quit, you will quit. And if COVID-19 is the reason for you to quit, then you'll do so at your own election.
Yeah.
You're not going to be coerced into it. Because like we said earlier, you know, if you're going to just take it away from somebody who's not interested in quitting, he's going to have extremely negative effects, which he was not prepared for.
Yeah.
You know, it even for me, it went as far as not being able to work, not being able to concentrate. I couldn't sit at my laptop for more than 2 minutes before I was already going crazy and needed to walk.
You're 100% correct. Yeah. 100%. In fact, I've seen some emails from ordinary consumers who basically say that they've got conditions, medical conditions. And now that they've taken away the cigarettes from them, they can't focus in a day. You know, their whole systems just seems to want to shut down. They believe that they may actually even die out of the withdrawal.
Yep.
Well, we got lots of messages coming in here, and Raiz, Leanne, Sia, feel free to comment on any of this. We're all individuals who have the choice to be able to make our own decision. The basic freedom has been taken away, and that is the main problem I have with it. That's from Ruth. Someone else saying, should we all wear a black bag to show how unhappy we are?
Oh, goodness, no.
And lots of people asking about whether or not this means that the same stuff applies to alcohol. What do you think of that? Anyone want to throw in any comments there?
I feel like alcohol affects... having alcohol affects your performance and your day-to-day capabilities more than not having alcohol or not having cigarettes does. I think it could lead, an excess of alcohol could lead to bad choices, and, you know, breaking the law, etc., and unwanted behaviors and perhaps more hospital visits, etc. So I don't think it's fair to compare alcohol to cigarettes at all.
Yeah.
I do agree with me on that.
Tell me how the legal industry is dealing with this. I know you have clients that you represent. And really, as I said earlier, these guys are not given a fair shake at being able to put their side of the story across because they're so maligned by government and their channels for communicating are so limited. Reyes, are there ways that the tobacco industry can actually stand up for itself other than to go to court every time?
Seemingly not that much, Gareth. I mean, not consulted prior to the ban. This came as a surprise to them as it came to everybody, you know. So there's been no participation from government side, no consultative process about how we should actually go about this, you know, limit sales on a curfew or something. There hasn't been any talk about it. It's just been a blanket ban. So there hasn't been any discussions on this yet.
And are people in government even willing to sit and have discussions with the tobacco industry? Or are they just because they're like a pariah. They're kind of outside the world. And yet you say 11 million people in this country want to have them included in what goes on in their lives. They're just being ignored.
Yeah. Look, GoLeaf belongs to an organization known as the Fair Trade and Independent Tobacco Organization. Yeah. Who actually represents a few of the local manufacturers. And they've been trying to talk to government. They, in fact, launched a court application because all of their requests were just basically falling on deaf ears. So they launched a court application to try and reverse the decision taken by the government and, in fact, to have cigarettes considered an essential good, even at level 5. So assuming even if we go back to level 5, we should still be able to sell. But, you know, like you say, Gareth, is court always the best place to deal with it in the sense that shouldn't we be having a more open discussion with government?
Right.
But they haven't set the platform for that. So, you know, unfortunately, sometimes you just have to do what you have to do.
Well, I'm delighted we got to at least speak to you this morning and maybe bring a little bit of balance to what has otherwise been a very one-sided argument. Those 2,000 people who Minister Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma said that she got support from to continue the tobacco ban, do we have any idea who these people are? Has there been any clarity from government about the decision-making process behind the scenes when it came to tobacco bans and so on? Or are we just expected to accept it and move on?
Well, actually, in the court application, government stated that the minutes behind this are actually classified. On those 2,000 people that you're speaking of, I'm not too sure of them, but what I can say to you is that I don't know if you've seen, there's another poll which has been running alongside that one.
Yeah.
Where they've got about 500,000 signatures calling for the ban to be reversed. So, yeah, if you compare apples with apples, I think which direction this thing should go.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up too. Listen, Reyes, good luck to you. Good luck to your clients. And I hope we get to hear more balance in this discussion going forward, because the people who have a problem with tobacco clearly have the lion's share of the market in terms of communication around it too. So I thought it would only be right to get you in, as we've discussed, you know, the hairdressing ban with hairdressers, and we've discussed all kinds of other hot food bans with people in that business, the liquor industry we've spoken to. So I'm glad we got to spend a bit of time with you this morning, and thanks. We'll probably speak to you again soon.
Fully appreciate it, Gareth. Thank you very much, man.
Thanks, Reyes. There's Reyes Saint. Yeah, isn't that cool? Like, finally, we get to hear the other side of the discussion, and it's a side that we've often brought up on the show, because I may not be a smoker, but I'm all for people's individual rights. You want to take, if you want to take something that's bad for you, do it. You want to do bungee jumping, which is, look, the chances of you dying in bungee jumping are kind of high. But if you want to do it, who the hell am I to get in your way?
Yeah, let's bring back our choices, man.
Hashtag bring back our choices. Let's get that going. All right, can we just do that? Is it possible for us to do that?
I don't think that's asking for a lot.
Morning. This is a message that's just come in on the line. Do we as citizens actually believe that any of our elite government officials don't have contacts to consignments and do not smoke? Ooh, or pass them on to their friends? I have contacts and I'm just a middle-class person. Of course those people in government do. If there are smokers in government, you know, Thabo Mbeki famously used to smoke a pipe. I don't know if he still does that. But you're telling me that those people aren't getting what they need?
Yeah.
Of course they are. Everybody's got contacts. I mean, Leanne has people dropping stuff off illicitly in her driveway sometimes.
My boots like a drug den.
And yes, one could argue and say no, but the ministers are important because they have to do these public, you know, statements, et cetera, et cetera. But I haven't seen a minister or a politician look like they haven't had a haircut in a while,
yeah,
or they don't have their makeup done.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen
yesterday? There
have
was
seen Trevor Noah lately.
Yeah, he looks horrendous.
He's getting a full-on fro. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yesterday, there was a video of the president out jogging, mm-hmm, and it was taken by, I think, the editor of the Sowetan from her apartment because the president was walking downstairs and outside. And she heard these two women call out and say, "Mr. President, thank you so much for all that you do. We'd love to take a photo with you." And the president stopped and said, "Sure." And you can see these two women walk straight up to him and they're standing side by side. No, like, social distancing taking place. And you start to go, it's more a do as I say thing than do as I do.
Yeah, he was standing quite close to these two women as well.
Please, guys. Are there really any people left in the country who aren't living under a rock, who think that COVID-19 is the most dangerous thing that could happen to them? Really?
Well, no, I just have to be honest and admit that I feel a little duped as a person who is, and I'm not glorifying myself, but as a person who's still following what is set on paper, I'm like, well, why am I even trying then?
Guys, I think let's bring back our choices across the board. And I think this is a good, maybe this is a hashtag we could start up. I don't know how far it'll go. I don't know what it'll do. Maybe nothing. But I think people are just giving up these choices. And you have the right to choose whatever you put into your body. You have the right to choose whatever person you want to be with. You have the right to choose where you want to go and what you want to do and how you'd like to look after your family. And that no one, not any government in the world, should be able to tell you otherwise.
I'm kind of against the hashtag and getting people riled up about it. Because as we are doing that, government's putting their foot down even firmer. It's almost become a game now where the more letters we write or the more petitions we sign, the more they're going to say no. I think if we just keep quiet, let the reality of the lack of funding to government and to the country as a whole set in, and then perhaps things will be reversed.
All right.
But there's so much danger in silence, in my opinion.
Let's see. I mean, if you want to talk about it, then put your comments up on social media. We'd love to see them. And if you don't want to talk about it like Leanne and you think it makes more noise, then just quietly wait, because maybe, just maybe, that's something that will happen in any case. It, you know, eventually the tsunami of opposition will just be too much for them to resist. Let's see what happens.
We live in hope, man.
Yeah, I feel bad for smokers. Not just because I have them in my life. I don't like cigarettes at all. I don't like the smell. I don't like the fact that anyone should be so reliant on a substance. But it's none of my business.
It's the greater concept of being something being taken away from us. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And Leanne, now that you do have a few cigarettes and understanding the state the country's in, have you found that you're smoking a little less, or you're trying to ration?
No, I found such good suppliers that I don't need to ration. But I mean, I was following the book initially, and I was smoke free for 2 weeks, which were 2 weeks of absolute hell. And it's interesting. I'm actually there's a podcast to this effect in the works, a Cliff Central podcast, which I'll be taking part in. Obviously things have turned around now that I've been able to find cigarettes. I may very well have stopped smoking, but that extreme desire and craving would never have disappeared because somebody else had told me to do it.
It wasn't a decision you made for yourself. It wasn't a realization you came to.
90% of the panic was knowing that if I really felt terrible, I still couldn't access cigarettes. There weren't any in the shop. I mean, the times where I've given up smoking before, where it was my own choice, I always found it easier if I had a few cigarettes in my handbag. Knowing that they were there helped me to not panic.
I get what you mean, and I don't mean to dilute or erode your point, but I would often spend time at home, you know, even in weekends. I would love a weekend when I would leave the office on a Friday afternoon, stop by my grocery store, get some of my favorite snacks, and not leave the house up until Monday morning. Yes, I'll just lounge around and moisturize. You know, that was a delightful weekend, in my opinion. But it's now the fact that I don't have my options. I don't have my freedom. I don't have my choices. That is what is uncomfortable to me still about the lockdown.
Exactly.
Ish, it's taking its toll, man.
Shit's getting real, man.
Shit's getting real.
All right. Well,
I would rather lick the saliva of the Zol.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, did you hear about the fact that Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma wanted to meet with the producer of that song?
Uh-oh.
Oh, really?
I know. So
is this a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
It's turned out to be a good thing, thankfully, because the exchange happened a couple of days ago on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Minister Dlamini-Zuma actually tweeted out saying, "Who is this Max Harrell fellow? We just need to talk." And
I would have run the opposite way. Like, don't give me an opportunity to meet Minister Dlamini-Zuma. I would be running for the hills.
It's like, oh no, why are you calling me? And Max just responded saying, "Hi, Minister, please follow back and then we can chat over DMs." And she did. Mm-hmm. It's not clear as to whether like they actually had a conversation off their DMs and perhaps even a call. But Max has now said that the minister did reach out to me. She followed me back and we had a brief chat. And he says she was very nice. She found it funny, actually, and encouraged me to keep doing good with my craft.
Okay, great. Well, all right. There's some credit to Minister Dlamini-Zuma.
Some humanity.
Yeah, some humility, and a little bit of humor. Three H's. Yeah. Great.
She's able to take, you know, the piss out of herself here.
Well, that's good news. I see in less good news that CNN has taken Greta Thunberg on as a panelist to listen to the experts. Like, she's an expert. Now, I'm sorry, but the experts are exactly the people who've got us into the shit that we're in right now. And I don't mean this, Mbulela, I know I'm going to get resistance from you. But the experts have led us down a path. And I want to ask this question. If experts get it wrong, and they're experts that we've relied on, who have qualifications or research or anything else, and it goes wrong, what price should they pay for being wrong? If an engineer builds a bridge and the bridge collapses and people die, that engineer ends up being sued and ends up going out of business and they are thrown out of engineering permanently.
I don't know. We kind of expect experts to take chances.
Well,
they become...
it's unacceptable. They are wiping trillions off the global economy. They're putting millions, hundreds of millions even, into unemployment. They have ruined lives. They've also got the deaths completely wrong. They've put medical facilities on standby and high alert where they didn't need to be. And the world is destroyed, the world as we knew it, in terms of the economy and society, by a bunch of people who seem to have got it objectively wrong. These people need to be held responsible. I'm saying we need to have like a Nuremberg trial, because experts who get it wrong, there are consequences, and those consequences can be deadly. They can also be very expensive. Someone needs to find these experts who got it wrong, and we need to hold them accountable. I'm sorry, I'm not going
to
let this go.
But I'm happy to be on board.
In the CNN example, who's to blame?
No, hiring Greta Thunberg is neither here nor there. That's pure propaganda.
But Greta's like, okay, sure, I got the opportunity, I'm going to take it up.
I mean, she's a 16-year-old. Who wouldn't want to go on TV if you're 16? Bulela, what about you? You wanted to say?
No, I'm happy to be on board with what you're saying. As long as you were willing to apply that, to the bankers and economists
yes.
that created 2008, which I hear very few people be willing to. They say we must treat that existentially and as a separate matter.
No. I agree with you.
So, and we did nothing. They got a slap on the wrist, and we keep rolling on. So,
what about people then who've predicted this, the coming of Christ or the second coming of Christ? They should be held accountable too, damn it.
Yes, I agree there as well. And until we have the second coming, which I don't think any evidence shows that there has been a second coming of Christ anytime.
No, it would be the third coming.
Or a first coming.
Yeah. Back the second time.
No, I think this is important. Right. I think this is really important. There are measurable consequences, and all of them have been bad. It turns out that the lockdowns, the shutdowns, the quarantines all over the world have done more damage than the disease itself. And governments, while the governments have to be responsible for making the final decision in each of their jurisdictions, the experts that they relied on need to be punished as well. We need to find a way of holding them accountable.
The problem with this is that real science takes time, and unfortunately we don't have that. But the problem now, Gareth,
then is that by your own definition, those people who are making these predictions and these experts who are telling us what to do up to now are not real scientists because they didn't take the time.
Well, the verification of these things takes excruciating peer review. So nobody wants to get it wrong, and they are trying their best. So we mustn't paint the picture.
They have got it wrong, and they need to be held responsible.
I feel this is the same as in Bulelo there, where we would almost need an identical situation to unfold, and we treat it in the exact opposite way. In order to scientifically verify the two.
This is the thing about political pictures, is everybody will, maybe Trump got it right or wrong. Do you know, political regimes, you only see the reward in American politics, generally the stats say, 3 terms later. So whenever a president inherits a term, it's not what he's done, it's what the guy 2 presidents ago did. Now, nobody ever talks about
it. I hear you. But there are small businesses. We all know people who had a business 2-3 months ago and do not have that business anymore. That is not their fault.
Okay, that's a separate matter. And in the immediacy, of course, there's blood in the water. And that's a separate matter.
People's lives have been ruined by the decisions of government, not by a disease. And those government officials make their decisions usually because they consult with experts. If the experts got it wrong, and therefore government got it wrong, and people all over the world are now suffering and going out of business and finding themselves unemployed, somebody has to be held accountable. And it might be at the ballot box in 6 months' time when we all go and vote and we go, these guys got it so wrong they need to pay a political price for it. Maybe it needs to be that the experts are they're stripped of their title expert. They're stripped of their academic qualifications, that they are released into the world that they've put so many other people in of unemployment. Someone has to pay, and maybe it's the people who started this disease or the people who allowed this disease to exponentially grow outside of laboratories or whatever it might be. But everyone on earth is currently looking at the situation going, this is not acceptable. Someone has to pay. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah. And I think if we don't end up in either heaven or hell, everyone who told us we would should also pay.
Yes, but that will need we'll need a lot longer for, and I don't know which judge to call in to.
Plus, you'll be dead by the time you hear it.
Leanne, how do you propose that happens?
The Vatican's doing better than ever, Leanne, don't you worry.
Someone was also saying they don't understand how hell came to be, because, I mean, shouldn't the devil be rejoicing that we followed his unruly word? So we should be celebrating. He shouldn't be torturing us down there.
Hey, guys, does anyone know, just before we finish the show for this morning, Thursday is Ascension Day. Is that a holiday?
No, it's when Jesus rose.
Man, Leanne,
is it a public holiday?
I'm confused.
Yes, it is. Hang on. Is it?
No, I don't think it is a
knew you guys wouldn't know the
public
answer.
Holiday. It's a Christian holiday, the same way Rosh Hashanah
and... This is wild.
And
if anyone knows, I'm sorry, I asked the three most useless people in the fucking world. All right.
Yes, it is a holiday.
A public holiday.
It's not.
From what I can see, according to Google Calendar, it is a holiday in South Africa.
We have 12 public holidays.
Oh.
Starting with Human Rights Day, Freedom Day, Youth Day,
Christmas
Heritage
Day,
Women's Day,
Workers' Day.
I shouldn't have asked.
So essentially, it's a Christian holiday, not a public holiday. Right, I'm done.
If someone who actually knows what's going on can let us know, please, 079-748-2090, or you can email me. I would love to have someone with brains, not Leanne or Sia or Mbulele, to figure this out for me.
Save our souls.
Is Thursday a public holiday, or is it just a Christian calendar day?
Raveshni says, no, it's dependent on schools and provinces.
We can't rely on schools at the moment.
According to timeanddate.com, Ascension Day in South Africa is not a public holiday. Businesses have normal opening hours.
All right. Okay.
And it's a Christian holiday.
I'm going to take that as the official point of view for now until I learn more from...
Rather pitch up than be sorry.
And on www.gov.za, Ascension Day is not listed.
Thank you,
on a public holidays in South Africa list.
There we go. Sia has found the truth. Thank you very much. All right. Well, we'll be here on Thursday anyway, so don't worry about that.
Yes.
But I was just curious as to whether or not it's a calendar holiday or it's just a religious day that people will observe without having to take the day off.
Okay, curious, George.
Thank you.
I'll celebrate it by drinking rosé.
Thank you.
Nice.
Because he rose.
All right, everybody.
We're done, right?
Yeah. Have a happy day. We will see you tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock bright and early. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com